But we begin today. Small claims courts are going to change. Some of the things that you have called this program over 9 years or called our predecessor programs over these 20 years complaining about stuff going on in the small claims court, that is going to change. There was a special, first of all, there were some articles. Then there was, in the Wall Street Journal and other places, then there was a special commission that the Indiana Supreme Court set up that was headed by a retired judge and an active appeals court judge. They came on this program earlier this year, got feedback from people. They had public hearings all around Marion County. They got feedback. They talked to the small claims judges. I got some small claims judges here, and they're nodding their head. Yeah, they came and talked to us. And the whole idea was to make the courts more efficient and effective, to make sure that the courts act independently, that they are an independent branch of the three branches of government, there was no sense of impropriety, because sometimes people would go to the small claims court, the judge would be out on lunch break, and some of them lawyers would kind of try to be sneaky. And talk to clients, but talk to them in the courtroom. And then the defendants, they didn't know. They thought the court looked like Judge Judy or something. But anyway, there are changes that are going to be made. A list of recommendations have been made, and they're asking for public comment. And depending on your comment, they will go into effect, I believe, in less than 30 days. At January the 1st, there may also be some legislation that will go to the new session of the legislature, those of you that elect them, on November the 6th. In the House is the circuit court judge of Marion County, Judge Louis Rosenberg. Under state law, the small claims court's kind of the circuit court judge. Besides running circuit court, he or she is responsible for making sure that our small claims courts operate according to Hoyle. And I've got two small claims judges in the House, which means they must not be having court out in Warren Township and Pike Township. Judge Doug Stevens, the judge of small claims court in beautiful Pike Township, and Judge Garland Graves, the small claims judge out in beautiful Warren Township, also joined me live. Guys, welcome. Judges, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to be here. Of course, I need to remind 239-13. I need to remind you that if we take questions, these judges cannot comment on any case that has been before them or on appeal. You know, that's my I got to read the Miranda rights, because I don't want the new Chief Justice of our Supreme Court to come after me. You know, Randall Shepard's gone, got a new Chief Justice, and I want to. Oh, speaking of that, the governor appointed a woman today. Judge Loretta Rush from Tippecanoe County, only the second woman ever to be on the Indiana Supreme Court, first Republican woman. So finally, I think all the women in the governor's household finally got to Mitch saying, before you leave, you need to appoint a woman to the Supreme Court. And the governor did that. Anyway, judges, welcome. Judge Rosenberg, what are these changes that, if depending on public comment, will take effect in our small claims courts, all nine of them, starting right after Ryan Seacrest says it's 2013?
Well, to begin with, we've already have developed a brochure that's being available to everyone. Mm-hmm. It covers rights and responsibilities of people who come to small claims court. Another important rule that will go into effect is that all payment plans and settlement agreements will have to be approved by the court, by the judge only. Another thing that is clear in the rules is that if the judge feels that it would cause substantial hardship, he can modify a payment plan or, for that matter, even reduce a garnishment. Mm. So it doesn't have to be the full maximum. There's about 30, 40 changes. But you mentioned the change in the atmosphere, so to speak.
Right.
And I think that some of the important changes are you're not going to see creditors calling the roll, so to speak, and negotiating with individual defendants out of the sight of the court. In other words, it's going to be clear what the creditor's role is and what the court's role is. There's a number of other changes, but those are four of the highlights.
As I read through them, some of them are real simple, like name tags, so that people who come to the court know who works for the court. They would have a name tag, except for the judge, because the judge would have the robe on. And then anybody else, they don't work for the court. So if somebody came up and said, hey, I'm with the court, if they don't have the name tag on or they're not sitting on the bench in a robe, don't listen to them.
In addition, there will be court personnel who at the outset will point out that individuals don't have to negotiate with the opposing party. Uh-huh. But if they do, it's going to be emphasized that it has to be in writing and it's going to be subject to the approval of the court. And furthermore, we're going to make it very clear that if someone wants to see the judge, they want to talk to the judge, they're going to be able to. They don't have to go through the creditor's attorney or anyone else.
Walk me through some of the rules that govern if someone in, say, Judge Stevens' court or someone in Judge Graves' court is doing a great job and the judge says, hey, I'd like to, give them a 20-cent an hour raise in what they do, that those judges would have a little bit more freedom and flexibility over the staffs who work for them?
Well, I don't have the power to require that, but
Is it coming to that?
I think there's going to be a Supreme Court decision that will deal with that issue. Mm-hmm. What we expect is that the Supreme Court, we hope, will find that in order for the small claims courts to truly be independent, they have to have control of their personnel. And that includes salaries.
One of the things I noticed was a requirement of when notice has to be sent to someone of an appearance in a small claims court.
Uh-huh. Well, you should receive, except in evictions, you should receive at least 20 days notice before the hearing takes place.
And in an eviction, is there less?
It can be less. It can, if there's an emergency, it can be as short as 72 hours. But that's a very unusual situation. It'll be, the maximum will be 10 days.
One of the things I also looked at in the rules is that either party, either the creditor or the person that allegedly owes, can request the case moved from one small claims court to another, a change of venue. And I think a lot of consumers didn't know they had that right. That is the right of every defendant to say, hey, I want to change a venue. I don't think I can get a fair hearing here. Is that one of the changes?
That is one of the changes, but the real implementer of that change will probably be the Rules Committee of the Supreme Court. What the Supreme Court is now considering, is that unlike the present situation where you as a creditor can file wherever you want, mm-hmm. under the proposed rule, you'll have to file where the defendant lives,
okay,
or where the transaction took place.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to mention one other thing, if I could sneak this in. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference between Judge Judy, Judge Al, in other words, the way the small claims courts are pictured. Typically what you see in these TV programs is you see a non-lawyer mm-hmm. party on one side and a non-lawyer on the other side. And in a sense, that's a fair way to deal with an issue. But in the small claims court, especially in regard to debt collection, what you typically have
right.
is a represented attorney, a represented plaintiff, and an unrepresented defendant.
Mm-hmm.
And under those circumstances, there can be a lot of overreaching. That's what we found. And so what we're trying to do is make the playing field level mm-hmm. so that the average person can have the protections that they might have if there was an attorney.
You may have questions about the changes coming, prospective changes coming to all nine small claims courts here in Marion County. 239-1310, 239-1310. This afternoon's name is Judge Doug Stevens. How will these changes help small claims courts give even better service to not only the people of all of Marion County, but the folks in beautiful Pike Township?
Well, I think the changes are going to make the court a little more user-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And we've actually been doing a lot of the things that the rules contemplated before that, and then when we saw kind of where the draft of the rules was going, we started making those changes already.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also the new rules will require us to have a few more forms available
right.
because a lot of people will come in, and if they're not represented, we have told them you can handwrite it.
Yeah.
Just put it in writing so that the judge can see it and mm-hmm. be able to not have this one-on-one exchange with you so it can be provided to the other party. So I think it's going to make a little more user-friendly. And we've gone out of our way, I think, with the posters in the court and the notifications that'll be on the notice of claims to try and advise everybody as best you can with your rights. I mean, we can't stick two bookshelves worth of laws onto a piece of paper front and back. So we've tried to do what we could.
Judge Garland Graves, how will these new rules, affect your court out in beautiful Warren Township?
Well, I think it's a sense of fairness or even playing field. I think that when litigants come to court, plaintiffs and defendants will feel that with the rules changes, that they at least know what's going on.
So if these rules get approved and go into effect come January the 1st, then if somebody lives in Warren Township and there's a dispute between an apartment complex or a dispute between a used car dealership in Warren Township, that that creditor wants to take action, they can't go run to Pike Township and file it for something where the dispute occurred in Warren Township. They'd have to start out there with you.
Well, the current state of the law, and hopefully the law remains the same for landlord-tenant cases, it has to be filed in Warren Township where the property is located.
Mm-hmm.
All landlord-tenant has to be there, including claims for damages, even if it's just a notice of claim.
Hmm.
The rule as being contemplated, it just makes it so that the person that wants the proper venue, it would be closer to where they're at. They don't go from Warren Township to Pike Township. It's closer to where it's at.
And one of the other changes in the rule is somebody comes to a small claims court, and then the creditor says, hey, I can save you from going before Judge Stevens. I can save you from going before Judge Graves. Let's sit down here and see can we work that out. And the person, they really don't want to go in front of a judge. They'd like to, pay it off and go home. Or they've got the money, they've got the check in their pocket. They're ready to rock and roll. They said, okay, here's what we're going to do. Everything's according to Hoyle. But it doesn't go into effect until the paperwork going before you or everyone, the paperwork and the plaintiff and the defendant, all of that is in front of you. You look it over and say, okay, this is cool. And then you, sign it and go, hit the gavel and move on. That kind of how it's supposed to work?
Well, in my court, mm-hmm. if we've got a trial going on and right. somebody has done exactly what you said, they've worked out something and they want to leave and not have to wait.
Right.
My staff brings it into me, and usually when there's a trial going back and forth, there's a little spot where you can break.
Yeah.
And they'll wait there kind of patiently, and they'll give me the file. I'll take a look at the agreement, and as long as it appears to be fairly simple, I'll sign off on it then so right. that the people don't have to wait. Again, part of it being user-friendly, I think, is being able to get in and out in a kind of a timely fashion. So if somebody is backed up behind a trial and they've reached agreements, they can go in front of me. If they don't wait, if they can't wait, then they're going to have to either wait for me or – it would be signed after I get off the bench.
Well, let me chime in here.
Yeah,
what's contemplated is that the defendant will have an opportunity and the judge will have an opportunity to talk about whether this is something that they really want to enter into.
Mm-hmm.
The mere signature of an individual on a piece of paper doesn't mean that they really wanted to enter into
so
the
it
agreement.
Would sort of be the way that a plea bargain handles when I say that in a plea bargain. The judge has to, look that defendant in the eye. The defendant has to look at the judge and, hey, do you agree on this? Do you say you agree with this, you're agreeing with A, B, C, D, E, F, and G.
That's a general idea, but there's one exception
okay.
to it, and that is that if there is a notice of exemption rights, in other words, if it has been spelled out what the defendant could exempt under Indiana law,
uh-huh.
and the defendant signs it, and if the agreement looks otherwise correct, then that can be approved without the defendant being present.
Under these new rules, what happens in the hypothetical situation where a defendant knows they owe a certain amount?
Mm-hmm.
They want to do the responsible thing and try to pay that down. And the creditor may not be willing to accept a lesser amount, trying, you know, to get as much as they can. Under these new rules, is there going to be, is there something where if you're only making $7 an hour, a little bit above minimum wage, and you owe $10,000, that creditor cannot say, I want you to pay $10,000 like right now?
That's, you're correct that that does happen. It's not just hypothetical. And under the rules, the court maintains the ability to revise a payment plan. Mm-hmm. That's been the law for a long time, but I think we're going to try to make sure that that's observed a little bit more. If take your hypothetical, someone who's making $7 an hour, mm-hmm. if they have to pay $100 a week, I mean, that's just not realistic. And aside from that, that's more than the creditor could get through garnishment. So the judge will retain the power to say, I'm not going to approve this unless you reduce the amount that's to be paid.
On, and I don't know whether these are covered by the rules, but one of the things that I've heard over the years, complaints from people in the community, in an eviction, the notice of the, because I get people that call and say, I got a letter from the landlord. I said, well, the letter from the landlord doesn't count for eviction. It needs to say small claims court of Township X. In serving that piece of paper, does that have to be done through the U.S. mail? If the person serving the paper just opens up the door of the apartment and slips it there, or slips it, right at the, you know, on the little mat at the door, and then for some reason or another, some kid comes and takes that piece of paper and goes runs with it, and then that defendant claims, "Hey, I never got it," and there's no proof that anybody signed for it. Does the rules deal with that, or is that just going to kind of stay the way it is? You know, if you got it, if you got the notice, you got the notice. If you didn't,
well, we try, and we're one of the few townships that still has a procedure in effect, because we kind of believe that sometimes it can happen where the constable goes out, knocks on the door, there's no one there, so there's no one to personally serve, so they put it on the door.
Right.
They come back, and since it's not been personally delivered, they have to mail it to the same address.
Right.
And then even if they don't show up, there's something gets mailed out to them that says you've been evicted. Our constable serves a red tag, goes out and puts it on the door. And we've stopped a lot of evictions where somebody just really hadn't gotten noticed, but had one extra step.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of go out of the way to make sure that nobody gets evicted without having an opportunity to be heard. So
right. Whether somebody's been served or not is a critical issue. And as Doug just pointed out, there are techniques that the court can use to make sure to make sure that individuals are personally served. I think that one of the rules that's overlooked that already exists is that in order to demonstrate that they really have served the particular document, the party serving that has to state in an affidavit the description of the property where he left the document. So I think that we do recognize that as a problem, and we are trying to deal with it.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Let me go to the phones and anonymous. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine. What's up?
I was calling concerning basically an eviction. As far as the Lawrence Township is concerned, the judge there was nice enough to make it so that I could pay money to get the eviction taken off due to the circumstances. Well, when it was time to go to court for the damages to the apartment, I had just started a new job and was going through orientation and was not able to take off to go to attend the court hearing. Well, when I went to file, I guess you would say an appeal on it, I guess the lawyers for the apartment complex or the judge said that I could not come back to try to answer to the damages to that apartment because I didn't make it to the first hearing as far as the eviction is concerned. And also my question is, can that happen? And the only reason why I really want to appeal it is because I have pictures and recordings of how I left the apartment which it does not add up to the amount of money that they're asking for. And right. then when the next tenant moved in,
Hold on, because I'm right on here on a borderline of what these gentlemen can and cannot answer under the rules of law. Let me ask you a question. When you knew that you had this new job and you were going through orientation for the new job, but you knew you had a court date, did you notify the Lawrence Small Claims Court of the conflict? No.
No, I didn't.
Okay, now. Hold on. Let me ask a hypothetical. Judge Stevens and Judge Graves, if there was a resident of your township that had a hearing date before your court, and the employer they had or their employment circumstance would not allow them to be there that day, do they have an opportunity to call the court or come to the court prior to that and fill out a form and say, can I change the date?
Yes. I mean, we keep that form available. We encourage people, and I'm probably known as fairly liberal in granting a continuance when it relates to employment, because my thought is if you know you may owe some money, it doesn't help anybody if you lose your job.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have to pay something back, you've lost your job. You're not going to be able to do it. So,
Judge Graves, similar?
Well, yes. And I think that's important, this in writing, because of just a phone call.
None of the courts, I don't think, will grant.
Right, right.
You want in writing. Send a fax. Does email count as writing?
It depends, but we accept faxes.
Faxes.
Or bring it in.
Or somebody bring it in.
Or mail it in.
All right, but then the other point, Anonymous, that I want to make to you and everybody that's listening, if you get a legal piece of paper that says, show up in court at such and such a date, such and such a time, you got to do that.
Right.
No excuses. Regardless of employer, family, unless there's an extenuating circumstance, and then you got to tell the court in advance.
Okay, and I understand that, but me not having to go through this, this is my first time.
But
I wouldn't have known.
And I understand that. And see, now you're kind of in, you know, a box because you weren't there. You didn't let the court know that there was a circumstance where they could have postponed the date. Now you're in something where they ruled against you, and now you're going to have to go through an appeals process to deal with that. But Judge Graves may want to add something hypothetically.
Well, this right here is not hypothetical. This is actually the law. Okay. Actually, there's two stages in this process. If you get a default judgment up on good cause shown, you can actually ask the court within 1 year to set a matter aside due to the fact you couldn't make it to court. If you were in a car accident, if there was an issue that you could not make it to court, couldn't notify the court would consider that within 1 year.
So she could go back to your friends in the beautiful Lawrence Township Small Claims Court and ask for
a set aside.
A set aside. Are you listening, Anonymous?
Got to put it in writing, though.
You got to put it in writing.
I put it in writing.
Wait, hold it. Did you Did you call it a set aside?
Yes, sir.
You
because,
did.
See, I called it an appeal, but when I got clerk let me know it's not an appeal. It's called set aside default judgment or something.
All right, so you filed those papers?
Yes, sir.
All right, have they set a hearing date?
They said that I cannot come back. They will not let me come back to answer to those damages to the apartment because I wasn't there for the eviction hearing.
Hypothetically, how long ago was the hearing?
The hearing was March, I believe it was in March.
Of this year.
The appeal time has passed, and that may be some of the confusion. Is the staff may have, or the judge may have treated it, if it was treated as an appeal, it would have probably, if it was filed more than 60 days after the hearing, they probably denied it. Because of it being an appeal, but a set aside, as Judge Graves pointed out, has got a longer life.
Let me ask this question: Do my friends at the Neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic are small claims matters something that they can advise residents of? All right, Anonymous, you need to take all your documentation, all your papers from the court, all the things that you filed, and go see my friends at the Neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic.
Okay.
Okay, and the number is 429.
Okay.
4131. You make an appointment with them, and they can kind of, you know, figure all of this out and give you advice on the best way to proceed, okay?
All right, just one more quick question. At the Warren Township Court, now this is for the student loans. I don't understand why is it that when we come into Warren Township Court, Judge Graves allows the DFS man to talk to us clients very, very disrespectfully, and they make us feel like we get ready to go to jail and we don't have that money for that student loan.
Well, can I respond?
Yes, sure.
PFS is one of the filers in Warren Township Small Claims Courts. They come in. When I'm on the bench and all the cases come before me when people are there, if a person being disrespectful, I do not allow that. So I'm surprised about this right here. When were you in court?
I was in there. It's been a couple of months, and the incident where the man had talked to the young lady so nasty at me, I had the young lady's grandfather died, and that man, he sat there in front of you, and he talked to that young lady so nasty, and talking about how one minute you said your grandfather died, one minute you said your grandmother, you need to make up your mind, this and another, and you made that young lady sit there in the front of that courtroom until everybody got through because you were going to lock her up because she didn't have any money in her pocket to pay what she was telling you guys. She does not work. She does not have any money, and it was basically like, just like with me, for instance, I'm not even going to speak on her. Just like me, I was receiving AFDC, and I was made to sign that paper saying that I will pay PFS back, or either I was going to jail.
Hold it. Hold it. Wait, hold it. You don't go to jail in small claims. Where did you get the idea that you go to jail?
That's the only reason why I signed that paper under duress, because they told me that I was going to go to jail.
Stop. Who told you that? Who told you that?
The representative for PFS.
Well, guess what? Let me ask these distinguished small claims judges here. What is the penalty if someone cannot pay?
Well, as Judge Rosenberg stated, that certain incomes exempt, like SSI, Social Security, child support, unemployment. So if a person do not have enough, have that kind of income, they can't be garnished and the court cannot force them to pay. If a person makes less than $217.50 per week, they cannot be ordered to pay anything. A garnishment can go on their go against them, so in weeks they make more than that, they can be garnished.
But anybody that comes before a small claims court in Marion County, is there any penalty that allows them to be locked up in the Marion County jail or the Marion County lockup?
No.
I
had this issue come up, and I made a long spiel to the folks that the only way you'd ever could possibly go to jail at a Marion County small claims court is if you failed to show up and you were in contempt of court, and I knew that you didn't show up. So I told the gentleman, anytime you get a notice from us, if you can't pay the debt, come on in and tell me that. You'll go home.
All right. I want, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
I want you to know, and the thousands of people listening, any lawyer or representative of a creditor that tells a defendant in any kind of lawsuit where you owe money, they tell you that you can go to jail. They are telling you a lie. An L-I-E, a lie. You would be within your rights to get the name of that attorney and report that attorney to the Indiana Supreme Court Disciplinary Committee, because that's a violation of lawyers' rules.
That's also a violation of law.
But also, you should notify the judge that he have actually made that statement, because if he makes that statement, the judge need to know so he can deal with it at that time.
So if you remember the day you were in Judge Graves' court and the name of that attorney, send a letter to Judge Graves. And let him know you the one to talk to him on the radio.
Okay.
But I want everybody to understand within the sound of my voice, you cannot get locked up in a small claims court unless you, A, have committed contempt of court because you didn't show up, or B, you, like, do assault in the court. You commit a felony in the court, like you cuss out the judge. That can't do that. You attack someone physically in there. You can't do that either. You understand where I'm coming from?
Uh-huh, I understand,
okay.
But I'm just saying only getting $139 a month, and that's
no, but no. But this is why they're putting in these new rules and procedures to try to make it fair and to try to send the signal to some of these creditors' lawyers who forgot the things they learned in law school that they can't do things like that. I appreciate the call. Thank you. 239. And that is, Judge Rosenberg, why some of these rules, that's where some of the abuses that came up. Where some lawyers forgot the things that they learned in law school, the ethics they learned.
They should have learned that in Sunday school.
Mm.
But in any event, I think that this is a problem that results primarily from the creditors thinking that they're in control.
Right.
They're not recognizing the limits that are on them.
Let me go to Fred right quick at 239-1310. Hi there. Fred? Fred going once, Fred going twice. We must have answered Fred's question. These rules are located where people can kind of read them over, and if they want to make public comment, they can make it in writing.
First of all, they can make comment by sending me a letter, Lewis Rosenberg at the Marion County Circuit Court.
Mm-hmm.
In regard to these rules, I'm going to be the person who makes the decision as to what their final shape will be.
Okay.
Secondly, they can post on the website of the Marion County Circuit Court, and they can also post on the state judiciary website. And I think those are the three principal ways that you can.
So they go to Indiana Judiciary.
Right.
I think that's indianajudiciary.gov. Or
actually, the rules are posted online. They can't.
Okay.
They
the rules.
Can get comment on. They can email.
So you just either go to Indiana Judiciary. We're going to look right quick. Or you can, send a note to Judge Rosenberg. As you've talked, Judge Graves and Judge Stevens, to your other seven colleagues on the small claims court, everybody kind of understands this is all for the better. You know, not only service to all the people of Marion County, but it make things run smoother.
Yeah, and this is not something that just happened recently. I mean, it goes back months that we started meeting, and we started implementing changes kind of by voice vote. We all looked around the room. There's certain things that, you know, maybe we need to get uniform while we're putting together changes to rules. So I think even before the rules have come out, we've tried to become a little more uniform, because I think that was probably – that's a complaint statewide. I mean, when you go from court to court, you know, there's going to be some difference from county to county. So we tried to shore up what was going on in Marion County so that somebody in Warren, when they walk into Pike, the procedure is going to be basically the same. They're not going to have the same judge, but, you know, they can be confident that everything is going to procedurally be done the same way.
239-1310, 239-1310. It's afternoon's name. Let me go to Kim right quick. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. What's up?
I got a question. Now, you made a comment about a judge. You can't go to jail in small claim court. I was in Franklin Township Court, and that judge was about ready to arrest me if I didn't agree to that lawyer.
And how long ago was this?
This was about 3 years ago.
Well, times have changed.
Times have changed. Okay. I'll listen to you every day. And for the judge in Warren Township,
yeah,
I small claim court in July, and there was someone was suing me, and he listened to me, and I didn't get no receipt from this company, and so what he did agree for where I can make payments to the court where I can get receipts, and I appreciated that. That judge was very fair, and that judge helped me a lot when I didn't get no help from the company that was suing. So, is that Judge Gray?
Yes.
I really appreciate you on that one.
Well, and thank you very much.
I appreciate that. If you you first of all, you can find out these proposed rules by going to www.courts.in.gov. That's www.courts.in.gov. Look for rules for Marion County Small Claims Court. You can make comments in writing, and you just mail them to the Honorable Louis Rosenberg, R-O-S-E-N-B-E-R-G, Judge of the Marion County Circuit Court, City County Building, W506, 200 East Washington Street, Indianapolis, 46204, or you can email them to, that's a great name here, Aida, like the opera, A-I-D-A dot Ramirez, R-A-M-I-R-E-Z, at indy.gov. And when we post this on our website at the beginning of next week, we'll have all this information for you so that you can do that, because they want to hear from y'all. So, see, that way the small claims court improve, and then you don't have to call me anymore with a small claims problem, because that all will be, see how all this works? That all, this is all helping me. That's all this here. Anyway, Judge Louis Rosenberg, the of the Circuit Court, and Township Small Claims Judges Doug Stevens of beautiful Pike Township and Judge Garland Graves of beautiful Warren Township. Guys, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Now y'all can go back and have court. I know it's Friday afternoon. There's court on Friday afternoon. Because they're not on the golf course. Anyway, when we come back, 100 black men are in the house. Other folk are in the house. It's Afternoons with Amos on a very busy Friday.